Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. It is now underway. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio. And just across the way, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Billy, how are you?
I'm good. You know, someone else's drinking can affect your life. Someone else's drug use can affect your life. It's a serious subject. We're going to talk about it tonight with our guest, Bob, who's in studio.
Looking forward to that. We don't have enough shows on our show about that. And everybody that uses chemicals and gets addicted, they affect probably about 10 to 20 different lives. So one of the great things that we get to see, Bill, is how those lives are affected when we get the miracle of recovery.
So we're going to talk about being in support groups for people who have addicts and people who have alcoholics in their life. And it's going to be a great hour. Because it represents a lot of people who are listening, George. I know people love hearing the stories of transformation or redemption from drugs and alcohol, but most of us who are out there listening, our lives are affected by someone who is using.
Absolutely. When you tell people that you're involved in an addiction ministry, everybody has a story.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to talk to you about their brother or themselves or their parents. And it does affect. And just because we get sober doesn't mean we're still that easy to live with and be around. And we work our programs continuously. Paul wrote in Philippians that we press on towards the goal, Bill, and that's of holiness, to be Christ-like. The process of sanctification never ends.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we'd start tonight with step two, which
Let's do it.
Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And sanity, I know I should never talk about sanity. You're giving me that look. And
you should not be in charge of the sanity department.
Well, you know, I never wanted to be really sane because sanity is boring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've achieved that. It was a lifestyle goal and I've achieved it. But sanity, I believe, is being of sound mind and living in the truth and acting upon it. Insanity is believing a lie and acting upon that. It's okay for me to drink. I really don't have a problem. I'm not hurting anybody. So God can deal with it. You know, he's okay with what I'm doing. That to me is insanity. And we see it all around us. But what I wanted to talk about is the miracle of recovery. And Bill, we work with a lot of guys who this time, maybe they've had previous consequences, treatments. This time they really want to quit. Where did that come from? Why all of a sudden do you have the great sense to quit using? That's God, and
mm-hmm.
It's a miracle. And when we work with guys, the first miracle, and don't miss this, is now that you want to quit drinking and quit using, your best thinking got you into addiction. Why all of a sudden did you acquire this great knowledge that you should quit and you want to quit? It's the Holy Spirit. And when we recognize that, if God is for me, who can be against me? And he who began a good work in me, he'll be faithful to complete it. That's most encouraging to me.
George, let's dissect step two a little bit. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves. Now, we talk about the power. We know clearly who that power is on this show, which is Jesus Christ.
Correct.
And when you hear the expression, came to believe, that sounds like there's an awakening of the truth into the mind of a person by the power of the Holy Spirit.
Yes, but that doesn't always get recognized. I think a lot of people, myself included, probably the first 10 years I was sober, I came to this on my own. You know, you can say I'm a drunk and a drug addict. True, but at least I had the good sense to go to God to change it.
Mm.
And then after mm-hmm. a while, you realize, no, I didn't. God drew me in. And so if you're out there and you're struggling with your recovery, good for you that you're listening to the show and thinking about quitting. But God is drawing you. And I hope that encourages you that that's really a miracle. All of recovery is, but you're not in this alone because God is right there walking with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal.
Okay, George, more on step two. If we came to believe that a
moron.
Power... What? Moron?
Yeah, you call...
I didn't call you...
Okay.
No, I didn't. I said, more on.
Okay. I'm just a little defensive today.
Yeah, you're a little touchy.
A little sensitive, yeah.
Yeah. came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. What if you start using when you're 14 or 15, and now you've used for 15 years, and now you're going to be restored? Maybe you've never known sanity. What are you being restored to when you say sanity? I mean, you might need to be restored to a life you've never known.
Right. That's great insight on your part.
Yeah, for once.
I was thinking, true, that we've never known sanity. I would go as far as to say, if you've never had a relationship with Jesus, Jesus said, I am the way, I am the truth. If sanity is believing in the truth and acting on it, if you don't know Christ, that's
insanity.
You've
never known sanity.
No, you don't.
So it's a little bit of a vague step in my mind as I read it, because only through the power of Christ in your life can you be transformed into a new person.
Right.
And that person will have a brand new mindset and truth, which would be a sanity you've never known before.
Right. And there's a partial walking with God here. The unknown general grace that is poured out on humanity, Bill. There's a lot of people in recovery that have been sober a long time that do not have a relationship with Jesus. And the general grace that God provides has enabled them to do that. A lot of times working the 12 steps where people don't believe in Jesus, they believe in the higher power. But where did those 12 steps come from? They came from the Bible. The step we're talking about tonight is biblical. And it talks about knowing the truth through Christ. And so there's that. And Bill, the danger, of course, there is not giving credit where it is due. And if you're listening tonight, maybe you do have some years of sobriety and you haven't had a drink or drug in a long time, but you're not really happy. You're not supposed to be. We were created to have a relationship with the living God, the creator of the universe, and that is only possible through Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking, gosh, this isn't as good as I thought it would be, quitting and everything, you know, and you get the attaboys at first and medallions and stuff, and people are, and then after a while, people think that you're not going to drink anymore. It's normal, and that's not good enough for you. The question I would have is, how many people are you working with, and are you sharing the message of Christ? And if it's not good enough for you, maybe God's talking to you, go, hey, I'm here. I got you here. So let's take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. And if we think of step two, which is basically God can, let's just look at those 12 steps in their entirety, using a couple of words for each step. So here they are, George. I can't, God can. Let God, look within, admit wrongs, ready self for change, seek God's help, become willing, make amends, daily inventory, pray and meditate, and give it away.
Okay.
There's your 12 steps in a nutshell.
What was six?
Ready yourself for change.
What are you, a robot?
What do you mean?
Ready yourself for change.
Ready yourself for change.
Yeah, the shortcut, and I'm always looking for it. I always like the first three. I can't do it. He can do it. I'm going to let him do it.
All right.
It's a program of action, and anything that gets you into doing it is good. But we don't just read it. We don't just know it. I think about the book of James where it talks about a man who reads in Scripture and then walks away and forgets it. It's like a man who looks in the mirror and immediately forgets what he looks like. We don't just know this. We have to do it.
All right, George, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we have Bob in studio, who I would consider a premier expert on the support groups for people who have someone in their life that has an addiction. We're going to learn a lot from Bob tonight. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening. We are looking for a great time tonight with our guest Bob, who's in studio. I'm looking at Psalm 27. It says, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evildoers assail me to eat up my flesh, my adversaries and foes, it is they who will stumble and fall. I think there's a lot of people, George, that when you have a loved one who's using, and an addict, there's a lot of fear. There's fear that the the relationship could end. There's fear that the person who is suffering from an addiction could hurt themselves, possibly fatally, possibly hurt others.
Yep.
You kind of live with a lot of fear.
No question. And with the opioid epidemic, we're seeing in all areas, no matter where you live, no matter what you do, people are dying. Kids are dying. 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, younger. We've never seen this before, and it's getting worse. There's medically assisted treatments, which is the new thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not working for most people. So, yeah, it's always on the table.
Yeah. George, please introduce our distinguished guest in studio.
Well, our distinguished guest.
Yeah, distinguished. There's a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob. Our distinguished guest tonight is Dr. Bob, a friend of mine that I met in March. I met him on March 10th, 1983.
Can you be more specific?
He was working as the doctor in the treatment center that I was decided to go to.
Really?
And I knew him. He was a very nice man, and I'd see him over the years at church and walking around Lake Cornelia, and he's a great guy. Bob, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, George. Thank you, Bill. It's an honor to be here.
No, it's delightful to have you here, Bob. And you, your story really revolves around being in a support group for those, like, can I just call it by its name? The step groups?
Family and friends.
Family and friends. There you go. Perfect. Family and friends group. And you've been attending those groups for how many years?
Friends and family, I guess.
Friends, yeah.
Can I say Al-Anon?
There you go.
Yeah, I believe you can, but it's your call.
Well, I've been attending for 39 years. And if as a little backdrop, when I started in practice in internal medicine, I was with a father and son, and the father was instrumental in setting up the chemical dependency treatment unit at Abbott Northwestern with Reverend Phil Hansen, and his son was actually a member of AA. And so when folks came into the treatment program, didn't have a doctor on staff, you would be assigned a doctor. And I was in that rotation, and that's how I had the good fortune of taking care of George during his inpatient stay. And then, but before that, I went to a family wedding out in Colorado. I was divorced at the time, two kids. I went with my parents and kids, and my mother got drunk at the wedding reception and made my daughter cry. And I stood up. I didn't know what to do. And my dad kind of stood up, too, between us. And I'm not a violent person, and nothing really happened. You know, and the next day, driving back from Denver to Minneapolis, my mother looked out the front windshield, didn't say a word, you know, the entire 15-hour drive. I went to work on Monday morning. My partner, who was in AA, said, "How'd the wedding go?" I said, "Funny you should ask." And after I gave him the details, he said, "You know, you better go to Al-Anon." And then I had lunch with another friend of mine, and he asked about the wedding. And I said, "It's funny you should ask." And he said, "You know, you should go to Al-Anon." He said, "And I know where there's a book here in the lounge that has a list of all the meetings." And so he opened it up. He said, "Here's one Tuesday night. It's not far from where you live. You better go or I'm going to kill you." And
call that the direct approach.
He was 6'4 and about 250.
Mm-hmm.
I later found out he was in the NA program. And so I went. You know, two friends said, "Go to Al-Anon." So I went. And as George said, you know, at first I came. And then the leader of the group said, "You know, try Al-Anon for 6 weeks before you decide if it's going to help you or not." And he said, "You know, if you decide it's not going to help you, we refund all your misery." So I felt a relief after that first meeting, and I've been going back ever since, 39 years, and I've never regretted going to any meeting. They've always been helpful.
You know, George, it's interesting that there's going to be so many people who are going to be mad at the person in their life that's using, and they would probably think, well, it's their problem. You know, why does it have to involve me at this level? And I think, Bob, you're here to say this is one of the greatest gifts you can give yourself, isn't it?
Yes, yes. But I can remember that feeling of turning the doorknob and going in the first meeting and thinking, why do I have to go? I didn't do anything. I was the one trying to solve problems. And it, you know, it wasn't until I got to Al-Anon that I saw the truth. And that is, my problems are my problems. And if I could have solved them myself, you know, I wouldn't have to go to Al-Anon. But also, I did not realize how important it is. Relationship problems and life problems are to have spiritual answers for those difficulties.
One of the things I've always been curious about, being on the other end of the addiction issue, is when I got sober after all the damage and everything, I kind of became the star that George is sober now, and there was a lot of damage to people. And Bob, I got to think that for a lot of people listening, that has been their story, that all of a sudden we're doing great and everybody's real happy for us, and it's unsettled issues for people that live in our lives.
Boy, that's so true. And I think, you know, one, the immediate thought that comes to my mind is, when there's an addiction of whatever kind it is, that becomes the primary, really spiritual focus of one's life. And other things take a back seat, including your loved ones. And that causes, you know, hurt and emotional damage. And it's, I'd have to say, it's really hard for the codependents, of which I'm a prime example. It's hard to let go of some of the hurt and the resentments, and it's hard to be forgiving. And Al-Anon can be really helpful in that way.
How does Al-Anon help you? Let's just say that somebody was involved in a relationship with me when I was using, and I get sober, and there was a ton of things I did, and there were resentments, there were fears. How can Al-Anon help with that?
Well, I think the primary way it helps is you take the focus off other people and addictions, and you focus on yourself. You know, they say it's a selfish program, but not in the selfish way of harming others, but in a way of, I have to learn healthy ways of living for myself, you know. If I can say, when I first came to Al-Anon, somebody said, well, how do you define a codependent? And the person said, well, it's when you're on the brink of death and somebody else's life flashes before your eyes. And, you know, and that's so true. You have to take the focus off your loved ones. And for me, I had to learn, you know, what are my unhealthy behaviors and habits and things that I do that are harming others, including, you know, my alcoholic mother and, you know, my ex-wife and my kids. And so it's a long answer, but really it's focusing on yourself and developing tools to live in a healthy way.
I love, well, if it's focusing on yourself, there's no reason for me to go. I'm already doing that, Bill.
Right.
I think in a healthy way, of course, to get through that. The question I have next for you, Bob, is why do people keep going then?
Well, boy, these are tough questions, and I had no preparation questions.
We gave you no advance questions.
Yeah.
We just grill you.
Yeah, that's okay.
We don't prepare on the show, so don't worry.
Yeah, don't worry. We don't do show prep either.
And for you folks out there in radio land, they're both smiling.
Yes, we are.
Well, you know, the reason to go is, if I can say in general, for me and the people that are in the Al-Anon group I go to, the ones that have gone year after year, their lives are going better. You know, they have a healthier attitude, they have more joy each day, and they're able to deal with the ups and downs of life without going so far up and so far down. But many of the problems still remain, and that's the way life is. And so you have to have consistency And I would say that's the hardest thing about Al-Anon is going on a regular basis, whether it's every week or a couple times a month or once a month. It's just important to keep contact, and you need those reminders. Just as you two both in your beginning segment, you've referenced Scripture, how important it is to stay connected to Scripture every day. And so that's the reason I would give. Sorry for the long answers.
No, that's a great answer.
We like long answers. Right, George? That way we can talk less.
And I think our audience does, too.
Our audience appreciates long answers.
So it's a lifestyle. I'm wondering about the steps. Did they change step one instead where he admitted we're powerless over people, places, and things, or is it?
You know, I don't have the Al-Anon approved literature in front of me, but the group I'm in is a step group, which means every week we talk about one of the 12 steps, and then on the 13th week we have an open topic. Somebody might want to talk about guilt or family shame, and then we repeat that. The only difference that we've ever had in my group is in the first step. We say we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and the alcoholic and that our lives had become unmanageable. Otherwise, the steps are exactly the same.
Nice.
It's good.
It is good.
Yeah. I know we're going to go to break in a minute or two, but I'm real curious about, Bob, what you would consider to be the pros and cons of Al-Anon, because maybe I'm just imagining that there are cons, but I'm thinking, when you have a room full of people that are in a stressful relationship with someone who's significant in their life, who's using and creating a lot of stress in the home, there could be an interesting dynamic going on in the group. So how are the boundaries, and you know, what are some of the pros and maybe some of the cons? Can people get overly needy in this group? And all of a sudden, it gets difficult to deal with people's problems where they should maybe go see a counselor versus, a counselor in addition to Al-Anon. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking that people can come in with a lot of issues, right?
Oh, yes. And I think there are good support groups and there are not so good support groups. And it's important to find a good one. And in a good, a good support group would have a focus. And I would submit that's a 12-step group. And they would also have a challenge, encouraging you to grow. And you would also have support, feeling support and affirmed. And in our, for example, the group I'm in always recommends people have a sponsor. So when you do have that really needy situation with a lot of personal details that you're not so sure about sharing with everyone, you have a way to do that, a way to share that.
Mm-hmm. All right, Bob is our guest. We're going to take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery. We're so glad you are. If you are in a relationship with someone who's using, they're in an active addiction, maybe it's drugs, alcohol, gambling, whatever it might be, pornography, you can trust that you need to get some help yourself and that you need to not sit on the sidelines, but perhaps get involved in a support group, just like Bob has been in for 39 years. What a game changer it's been for him, and he's sharing some great wisdom with us tonight. So we will take a very short break, and then we'll be back in 90 seconds. So nice to have you with us tonight. You're listening to Real Recovery, Bill and George. Talking to Bob in studio. He's been a long time attender of Al-Anon and loves to share the support that he's received and he's helped give over 39 years. And Bob, just during the break, we were talking about a little of the pros and cons of support like this. And you had mentioned that it had really grown your faith over the years. I'd love for you to talk about that, because I think there's a lot of believers out there that feel anything that doesn't happen in a church group at their church is something they need to steer clear of.
Okay, yes. Well, as fortune would have it, I ended up being in a very good Al-Anon group right off the bat, the first meeting, based on the 12 steps. And I went because two people told me to go, and I had no idea what I was getting into. And they would read the 12 steps and then talk about one of the steps. And I really didn't understand it all, you know, but when I left, I felt relieved, and so I kept coming back. Now, I was a believer when I started going to Al-Anon, and some of the people in the group were believers, some were agnostic, and some weren't sure. But one thing that was really healthy about the group is there was no judging someone based on your spiritual beliefs. You know, everyone was allowed to be themselves. And I really appreciated that. So then when you come to step two, you know, we came to believe that a power, you know, greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know, that power for me was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and his son Jesus, you know, through the Holy Spirit, you know, the Trinity. So I didn't have trouble with any of the 12 steps. And I found that it really augmented and helped me grow in my spirituality because I saw how it extended so much to my behavior, habits, and relationships. And the 12 steps and the spiritual aspect helped me be healthier in all those regards. And so I would say if you're out there, thinking, you know, well, gee, should I really go to an Al-Anon group? I'm not sure if it's going to be all Christians. It's a tremendous opportunity to grow and a tremendous opportunity to witness.
It's great. So if you have been in a relationship and with someone that you love and care deeply about and you've been hurt or embarrassed by their behavior, that's a red flag. Or maybe you've told lies to cover up something they've done or something they're doing at home, there again, you're in a situation where Al-Anon would be a great place to go. And then what I probably hear a lot is, if you loved me, you would stop drinking. And that's a drum that you keep hitting and nobody seems to hear the sound of it. So it is important to take responsibility for your own tortured and tormented behavior and do something like Al-Anon.
Boy, absolutely. And so many, you know, it's easy to think, well, you know, my loved one has stopped drinking, so I'm just fine. And that's absolutely the opposite, because addictive behavior affects everybody adversely, whether you're the person with the addiction or a loved one who's trying to understand why the addiction is ruling somebody else's life and then trying to manipulate and change their behavior so they stop using. I mean, when I say that, you know, I used to think if somehow I would do the right things, then the persons I loved would do what I think is right. And I think, you know, that's so crazy to try to manipulate people. And yet that happens as part of the illness. That's why I say you don't have to decide, you know, do I have enough of a reason to go to Al-Anon or a group like that. If you think you should go, go and try it for 6 weeks and then decide if it's going to help you. Because really, there's not a definition of how much damage has to be done from someone's addiction before it affects me. If they're addicted, it's affected you, whether you know it or not. So I encourage you all, give it a shot. It's a tremendous spiritual help, boy, and you can't beat the price.
Mm. So when you are enjoying this fellowship and you're enjoying this time with others who are suffering, I would assume that they're starting to feel like they're not alone anymore. And the welcoming and the community is so strong that it gives people hope right away, doesn't it?
Oh, boy. Right on. Yes. Yeah. And ironically, Tuesday night happens to be my Al-Anon group, and I went last night, and it was on step two, the step that you began the program with. And in the group I'm in, we have someone will speak at the beginning of the group, and we'll go into small groups after that. And the person that volunteered you know, said the biggest thing that he got out of step two for himself is he's not alone. And You know, we have spiritual help, and then we also have group members and a sponsor that we can call for help, because we all face situations where we're not sure, you know, what's the best answer for us. And it's good to get help from people that are, you know, have knowledge and can be helpful.
You know, when God says, I will never leave you or forsake you, what would the enemy say? What would be the opposite of that? You're going to be alone.
Mm.
Yeah. Doesn't that make sense?
Oh, yes. And you better be afraid.
Because you will end up alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And God says just the opposite. Jesus says, I'll never leave you or forsake you. So usually if you just want to figure out what Satan is going to come up with, all you do is look at God's truth and just reverse it.
Yeah.
I think one of the important issues here for people in recovery and people that are in their lives is we're not on separate teams. And what I mean by that is I think an alcoholic could look at somebody going to, you know, worried about how it's affecting them, going, hey, I'm dying from this, and you're worried about how it's affecting you. Come on, that's a little selfish. But what we are is we are in this together, whether we get help or not, in that if we don't get help, we're going to go down the tubes together. And we can both come to a better relationship with this if we go and do our part for ourselves, which is all we can do. But what I'm really, I wanted to go with, it's interesting to me. You got a doctor here, Bill, goes to a wedding. His mom drinks and acts out a little bit. Guy comes back, talks to a couple guys, and they say, you should go to Al-Anon. And it's like, my thing would have been, I don't need to go to Al-Anon. My mom needs to quit drinking. What's wrong with you? He's a doctor. That's at the top of the food chain. And he goes,
no, radio host is the top of the food chain.
Yeah, well, I was trying to be kind to Bob.
Okay,
you know, we
right.
didn't spend 4 years in medical school. We were, you know. But, Bob, how did you get that willingness? Where did that come from? Where did you get the humility to do that?
You know, I think it was because I had failed relationships. You know, I was divorced, and then I had a couple significant relationships ending. And I had what was the geographical cure. My mother lived out of state, so it was so typical. I thought, well, you know, her drinking really doesn't affect me. She lives in a different state. But I could clearly identify I was having trouble in close, significant relationships. And so I thought, well, you know, I trust these two guys. I'll give it a try. And but that was the reason in my mind, you know, I think I'm going to have better relations. Maybe it'll help me.
So, Bob, what are some of the tools that maybe you walked away with or are still walking away with from your time in Al-Anon?
Well, if I can, I call that the four H's. And I don't mean like the 4-H club. But I felt tremendous relief after that first Al-Anon meeting. And one of the reasons was I realized my personal problems were not unique. And the second one is, you know, it looked like there might be some solutions to these life problems I was having. So the four H's, the first thing I felt there was honesty, honest sharing in the meeting. And then I felt there was hope because these people, they seemed to be, you know, optimistic. And there was help, you know, at the meeting, and they seemed to have healing. So that, for me, is the four H's. That's what kept me coming back. But I would have to say, honest, it all starts with honesty, being honest with yourself and then others. I hadn't been doing that in my life.
It's not easy, is it?
No.
Yeah, I'd like to hear you say more about that, because I think that that's an issue for many.
Oh, yes. Well, what is the honesty? Well, the first part of it is realizing that addictions are illnesses. And there'll be some people who will argue that, but they're an illness from the standpoint of, you know, looking at cause, clinical course, cures, treatments, you know, all those things that can define an illness. And when you look at it from that standpoint, you know, you realize you give humanity back to the user and just don't label a person an alcoholic. But, you know, the first thing I saw is, you know, that's a human being that has a problem with alcohol. And that's one of the forms of honesty. And the another form of honesty is I was trying to control other people's behavior, you know, and some of you will say, well, it would be by trying to hide their liquor or, you know, picking them up if they're drunk or making excuses for them if they can't go into work today. But all those are forms of dishonesty, you know, doing things against your value system that you wouldn't normally do. And I did that as a codependent, trying to I wasn't living with my mother anymore, but trying to control, you know, the relationships I was in. And I would say at the bottom, so people would like me and love me and not reject me.
Did you learn something new about how to interact with the significant people in your life that are using? Because I think the lesser trained person will come and be judgmental, and you've got to stop doing this, and this is not working. And if you know, you find out that you're forceful and judgmental, and that seems to always backfire, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It never works. And if I can say, too, when I first saw step two, which you were talking about earlier, I had a hard time with it because it said could restore us to sanity. And I thought, I'm not insane. I've got answers if these people would just do what I think, you know. And I was thinking that was, you know, sane behavior. And one of the old timers in my group said, insanity is when you do the same thing over and over and you think sooner or later it's going to end up differently. Making the analogy of touching a hot stove, thinking if you do it enough times, sooner or later you're not going to burn your finger. Well, then I immediately realized, you know, my behavior has been insane. Thinking I can control other people, that's insanity. And so that was a big insight that I got.
That's a huge insight.
Yeah, I would say that's a game changer right there. In that, just like the addict is powerless over the chemical, we're powerless over people. And I imagine, Bob, the reason you go for 39 years is, and I hope your mom's still alive, but I'm going to guess she's gone on.
Yeah, that's an interesting story.
We will have time for that.
Okay. But my point is that I think this helps you in all relationships, not just with the addict and alcoholic.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. They say you need AA to keep sober and you need Al-Anon to live. And I keep going.
Well, I want to talk about your mom, and I also want to talk about detachment. I know that's a valuable technique in Al-Anon, isn't it?
Yes.
And I want to help our listeners understand what detachment is, and it's not a bad word. It's a healthy word, isn't it, Bob?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so we'll do that with Bob. He's our in-studio guest, and you know you're listening to Real Recovery because you tuned in probably. And if you just caught us by accident, we're glad you're here. We'll be back in a minute.
There's many things I wish I didn't do.
Thank you for being with us tonight. We've got Bob in studio. We're talking about support groups for those who have a loved one in an addiction, and support groups are critical. And Bob, you were chatting during the last segment about your mother, and we're always interested in hearing how that story sounds like she's gone on and has left quite a legacy.
Yeah. Oh, and I love my mother, and she was a lot of fun in many ways. You know, she didn't drink that much, but every time she drank, she would get intoxicated. She wouldn't be able to stop, and she and my dad would argue, and I would feel so embarrassed. There was not a place low enough for me to hide. But she didn't do it that often. And just a reminder to folks, it doesn't matter how much a person drinks or how often. You know, it's the problems related to it. So if you think you should be going to Al-Anon, go. Well, my mother got drunk at that wedding. That'd be 1980. And then after that, she never drank very much. You know, it didn't get drunk when I was around her anymore. And then there was a family wedding. Boy, that was maybe about 8 years ago. My nephew got married. And this is out in Colorado, so I went out to the wedding with my family. And we took my mother to the wedding, who's now living alone. My father had passed away. And somebody gave her alcohol. She got drunk. And she said the most unkind, scathing things to my stepdaughter and my daughter. And at that time, you know, I was going to stay with my mother that night because she was living alone. I couldn't do it. We dropped her off at her apartment, and I went to my brother's. And I was so grateful that I had an Al-Anon meeting when I could go to when I returned home a few days later. So here I am. I've been in Al-Anon, you know, over 30 years, and the same problem happened again. But it didn't get me upset. You know, it didn't ruin my day or ruin my life or make me wonder, you know, what do I have to do for my mother? You know, I was able to deal with those problems, challenges in a much healthier way and not react and say things I would have regretted and not try to humiliate my mother. So I'm so grateful that I kept up at Al-Anon because, you know, we have situations every week where we have to think about what we say and do. And support groups are a way to help you to remember that.
Thank you for sharing that story with us. Maybe we can talk a little bit about detachment. I think that's a pretty valuable technique in Al-Anon, isn't it?
Yes, detachment. And that's a tricky one. And, you know, they say detachment with love. And for some people, detachment means, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with that person anymore. You know, they've hurt me so much. I'm done. I'm detaching. You know, and then there's But really, detachment means that you love someone, but you realize you cannot live their life or solve their problems for them, but you're going to be there to help and support them in healthy and loving and kind ways. That's what really true detachment is. And how do you do that when you've been hurt by someone? Well, I would say go to Al-Anon and, you know, take those 12 steps to heart, and you'll learn ways to forgive yourself and other people and ways to make healthier choices in the future.
So that's well said.
That's beautifully stated. And, Bob, I'm assuming if someone walks into an Al-Anon meeting, they might express that nobody could possibly understand how they feel. Maybe they have felt uncared for or unloved or neglected, and who's going to really understand how they feel?
Yes, and I would say that that's very common, along with, you know, why do I have to go? I don't want to be here. And all the groups are different, but in the group I'm in, when we have newcomers, we always have a first step group for that newcomer and make sure that we hear their story, and we usually have three or four new old-timers in that group, and the newcomers soon realize their problems aren't unique. You know, if they've had a parent, if they've had a sibling, if they've had a spouse, if they've had a child with an addiction, there's almost always somebody in the group that has had the same problems, and that's a really helpful part of that first meeting is getting a first step group and realizing that your problems aren't unique.
That's a big deal.
It's huge that there are other people. And I think in the church environment, Bob, I know I go to church every week and I get on my best behavior there. And I think if you're very honest in church, there's really not a lot of opportunities to get to the level of honesty and brokenness. I almost feel that the recovery groups mimic the first century church. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, I think you're right on again. You guys are so right on, but you've been doing this. I would say church, you know, primarily is for worship,
mm-hmm.
and then, but recently now, and I would say recently, especially within the past decade, there's been a much more of a trend to have small worship groups, you know, small church groups where you can share personal problems and get support and help. So I think you're absolutely right, and churches are starting to do that, but the 12-step groups have been doing it for a long time.
Bob, what happens if someone comes into the group, maybe for the first time, and they are showing signs of, ooh, I think you've been hit, or something, they show up and there's been abuse? I know that's kind of a difficult situation,
yeah.
But...
Well, that's a tough one for me to answer. But, you know, we would, what's important is that the group, in our group, we do not give advice. But we encourage people to have a sponsor where they can get some mm-hmm. one-on-one advice and to seek professional help. And we, it's always, if you're in an abusive situation, especially where you feel immediate harm, it's you don't want to stay in that situation.
And I would imagine there are many people that show up at an Al-Anon meeting and they've been emotionally abused about them even going to the meeting if they're telling their loved one that they're going.
Oh, boy, that's so... That happens, too, all the time. You know, my husband's mad at me because I'm gone here. He said, I don't need to go. And, it takes courage to go and it takes courage to stay. Mm. And There isn't anyone in my group that I know that has been physically abused after going to a meeting. Their spouses have given them a lot of flack for going to the meeting, but have never absolutely forbid them to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I don't know of anybody worse off that has come to the particular Al-Anon group I'm in.
George, this is a powerful subject that we're dealing with, and I think we should have guests on that are like Bob more often because
absolutely.
It represents such a big portion of potential listeners that tune into the show because they love the transformational stories, but they also, if they think about it, they might be suffering themselves about the actions or behaviors of other people regarding drugs or alcohol. And there's a lot to learn from being in community.
Absolutely. And addiction affects more than just one person with you. I think it's 10 to 20 people in your life. Work, kids, you know, grandkids, spouses, it affects everyone, including the addict alcoholic.
Yes, I agree.
So, Bob, any parting thoughts for people listening tonight going, oh, I need to maybe take his advice and go? Give them the final word of encouragement.
Well, I would say, yeah. If you're wondering, should I go, go. And try for 6 meetings before you decide if Al-Anon's going to be a help for you. And don't try to figure out, do I have a good enough reason to go? Are the problems significant enough? Just go, because it can be a tremendous spiritual help. And then on the second, I would say be sure to listen to this show. Because when I listen, and I've listened to folks from coming from the addiction standpoint, I learn a lot about addiction. And I learn a lot about the support and the help out there. And it's a chance to grow. So I've got to say, boy, Bill and George, thanks for this opportunity. It's such an honor. And you guys provide a tremendous ministry that's needed.
Thank you so much, Bob. It's very lovely of you to say that. George,
thanks.
I would call that another award-winning episode.
Absolutely.
In the can. Thank you so much, Bob, for being our guest. Thanks for listening and supporting Faith Radio. We have loved our time with you, as we always do. We look forward to the next time we meet. Have a great night, everyone.
Life is dull. It's nothing but one big lull. Then presto, you do a skull and find that you're reeling. She sighs and you're feeling like...
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.